remember the first time I came to Singapore, and I was lounging with Sir Stamford Raffles, and we took some pictures of the native girls, but they were underdeveloped, so we had to come back.
Hi, good morning, good afternoon, good evening, whatever it is, wherever you are. Thanks for subscribing, streaming, or downloading and listening to us on your computer or MP3 player. I'm Austin Titchener, one-third of the Reduced Shakespeare Company, and you're listening to this week's Reduced Shakespeare Company podcast, number 139, What's Really Changed? We're finishing up our very successful run here in Singapore. We sold out all 8 performances. The audiences loved it. And it was our second outing with the new revised version of the complete works of William Shakespeare, abridged. And now that we have the Miami and Singapore runs under our belt, we had a chance to sit back in our dressing room during intermission, or during the last couple of performances, and reflect on what's really changed in the script. Now that we've been handling the new changes, the revisions, William Shakespeare abridged, revised, what's really changed? Has anything really I guess my question is, would anybody who has seen the show notice that there that much has changed? Would you say?
Well, I'd say people who'd seen the show a lot or performed the show would notice it. For me, I guess the biggest change is there's a little tweak in my opening speech.
Yeah.
There's 2 changes that I have, fairly significant changes for me, which is the transition from Romeo and Juliet into Titus Andronicus, and the transition from Titus Andronicus into Othello. I think those are both much improved.
Much improved. Well, and I think my opening speech, I mean, there was nothing ever wrong with my opening speech, but I think it is definitely improved now. It's less... Well, it's more written. I mean, I thought the opening speech relied on... This is what they were trying to do. They were trying to make the text better so it wouldn't rely on performance necessarily. And so I think that the text of my opening speech is better just because it's more... There's more stupid scholarly pomposity in there, a ridiculous pomposity. And
they seem to... And all this seems to be in the opening, I don't know, third quarter of the first act.
Yeah.
But when... Matt says, you know, have you read King John? And he says, well, I downloaded it onto my BlackBerry. They love that.
Yeah, they do love that. They have definitely updated it. And they've also made a change in Rippy's opening speech where he now doesn't read it off of index cards. He reads it off of a smartphone. But they said we could go back to the original because I think we have all decided that we prefer the cards because it's more reduced. It's more low-tech.
Well, and we tried it the other way, and it seemed to get less response.
Yeah.
So we went back to the original, which seems to work fine. And he's referring to I Googled Shakespeare and found a lot of good stuff. So the spirit of the rewrites is there.
Yeah, oh, for sure.
Yeah, there was a slight paranoia that I felt like I have to rise to the challenge and make the BlackBerry work, you know, make it funny. But we tried, and I think the cards work better because I think there's just more physicality to the cards.
Right.
A digital item is just a thing that you look at, and we thought, well, could we get it to make funny noises?
Right.
Or I just couldn't find anything inherently funny about an electronic gadget. But the cards, it's great because they get out of order, and you drop them, and how on earth, by mixing up the order of your cards, could you get such crazy information suddenly on them that appears about you?
Yeah, and it also seems like, with the cards, it seems like it's more your mistake than the Internet's mistake.
Mm.
It seems like a mistake you've made.
Yeah.
Also, I mean, we never did really get the right prop, a really good smartphone prop. But again, it didn't seem reduced very much. So I can see that working for other productions really well, but not less so for us.
Yeah, definitely with tech-savvy crowds and, college kids and whatnot, I'm sure they can find fun stuff with their gadgets. And I would love to see that happen. That would be cool. One of my favorite changes is the what I call the APB, the audience participation bit, has a fairly major rewrite there, and I love it. It's less green heavy.
Less Matt Rippey heavy.
It's less Matt Rippey centric, and it's now evenly divided, and we all kind of share it and move it along. And I like that. It's I just get bored of the sound of my own voice. In fact, I'm going to stop talking now. Your turn. Go.
I like the rewritten comedies. Yeah. I don't know if we all feel the same way, but I like that we're not just narrating, we're acting out voices. It's that's the part that feels the most dirtier.
Yes,
sure. Bawdy, if you will, in Shakespearean terms. And I'm curious how that'll play when we tour it to college campuses and high school matinees. But in the spirit of it, I like it better.
Yeah, I'm less crazy about it, but it is definitely funnier. There are more bigger laughs in the middle of it, but I miss the intelligence of the original version, have to say.
And it's funny, the evolution of our attitude about the comedies. In Miami, we were kind of sad about what had happened to the comedies, and Miami just didn't think it was funny. Here, they are wetting themselves, and suddenly we like it a lot better.
True.
Well, and the other thing is we learned how to play it in Miami. We had small crowds. And so there were sections that we had to cut or change or tweak and ran it past the authors and said, you're the ones up there doing it. I think it's leaner and meaner.
And they've been really great. Jess and Daniel have been really great about saying, no, if you tried it, at least you tried it. But you're right, Miami was the only shot we had at it. Yeah. And the crowds just were not big enough to get critical mass, to get that nice big response. Here, sold out houses in a 600-seat theater, the response has been great. The most annoying thing, I mean, I do think, yes, there's more stuff I have to learn now in the APB, in the audience participation bit. I have to remember, this thing is now, I have to say the speech about the superego now. But there's a lot of small little changes that are just a little bit maddening, because I used to say, now to the feast of Capulet. But my new line is, now hie we to the feast of Capulet. And there have been a couple of nights where I go, nope, it said it wrong, which it really doesn't matter, but, you know, I want to get it right if I can.
But they are like just little obstacles that you can trip over. And it's funny, we move at such a pace that one little trip up and you can cause a catastrophic train wreck, as we saw tonight.
How dare the authors keep me from going on automatic pilot?
Well, when the audience is laughing, it gives you a little more time to think about it. When you have no audience, the pace is even faster, and you don't even have time to think.
Well, and that's true, too. I can't be, particularly in the first half of the show, the first act of the show, I can't be quite as fast and automatic as I used to be, because I there's just so many little changes. I have to kind of be conscious of, wait, is this new? This is new? This is new? So God help me, I have to be a better actor.
Yeah, and I like that we've been challenged to think again and actually listen. Each night I noticed that there are certain bits, like in the audience participation bit with Dragophilia Up, there are moments where we all are looking at each other, searching each other's eyes, going, okay, do you know where we're going? What's happening next? You do. Good. I'm following you. Okay.
You're leading the way. Now, you mentioned the green role. In England, they always thought of the three characters in the reduced shows as the green, black, and red role based on the color tights that they wore. So Adam Long played the green roles. Whoever played my roles was the black role. Whoever played Hamlet was the black role because he wore black tights, and whoever played Reed's roles, Polonius and Romeo, were the red roles because of the red tights. But for the previous Bible tour, you went back and performed the last 3 or 4 weeks of the UK Bible tour, right, Matt Rippey. And for all these years, you've been playing the green role, you know, your role, the Adam Long roles, the Matt Croak roles. But then for this tour, because the UK actors double up, you doubled up as in my roles. You were playing the black role, the guy who do I play in Bible? God, Moses. Yeah, that's you right. Do the Moses, the top 10. How was that? Was that a piece of piss? Was more thinking involved?
Oh, definitely.
What were the differences?
Definitely more thinking. And the guys were really great, because I stepped in. I mean, it had been years. The last Bible I had done, I think, was with you guys in the States, like maybe 2001.
All right.
So it's been a number of years. I directed the show, so it was somewhere in my head. But in the span of 3 days, I stepped into green and then black for the first time ever. And I have very little recollection of those 3 days. But the guys were great. And Simon, Simon Cole playing red and black, was very good about helping me eliminate all green from my black.
Well, because all the boyish, goofy, enthusiastic, excitable mannerisms and traits.
Absolutely. And it's funny how they can kind of sneak into to a performance. And so he was good at reminding me and trimming that away. And I think we got there in the end. And once I settled in to the black shoes, I really, really dug it. You sweat less. You don't have to run around as much.
Amen.
Yeah.
I remember when we wrote it, that's particularly the last half of the second act after audience participation, when we were just racing to the finish. Basically, all I do is bang the gong, point, and have Matt and Reed just be funny.
Yeah, yeah. Green runs a lot and fetches you prompts, I think.
Yeah. So did you do a lot of stroking your beard thoughtfully in a professorial manner, or?
I did. Yeah, I did a lot of the chin strokey. I really loved singing the songs. That was big fun. We switched it from keyboards. I don't play keyboards, so we adapted them to the guitar, and I really enjoyed that. It was amazing, amazing fun. And I would. The funny thing is, I realized that as a director, I direct like Green. I'm possessed by the spirit of Green when I direct. I get all goofy and bouncy and excitable. Mm-hmm. And when someone does something funny, I just about explode with excitement. And I thought, well, really, I should probably direct. I should assume the role of Black when I direct and do more of the chin strokey thing because...
Well, that's why you're well cast in the Green roles, because you are that guy.
Oh, yeah.
You are. Well, and I think it's a little bit of an issue on all the UK tours, why we tour with four actors sharing three roles and at least two of the actors know two roles. Over here, everybody plays what we believe they're best suited for, and we've probably said it before. Not that we're incapable of doing the other roles, but it's not natural, which sounds like what you're saying. You're naturally a Green. You can act the Black, but you are the goofy Green role.
Yeah, naturally.
Well, and I have to say, I'm a little concerned because I just watched your magnificent performance in the epic film Boogeyman 3, where you play a psychiatrist. And they had to put gray in your hair. Now, that is also a Black role. That's my role, the psychiatrist, and I don't like the idea that you're taking all my roles.
Yeah, I'm sorry.
Not that I would ever be cast in a movie.
I think you were busy. You must have been, because I'm sure they phoned you. But, yeah, I'm...
Am you, Matt Rippey?
Was that Places?
Places, please, gentlemen.
Oh. Ooh, and she's making her angry face. Look at that.
Second act in Singapore. Here we come.
This is Jess Winfield, founding member of the Reduced Shakespeare Company and author of the New York Times Editor's Choice, My Name is Will, a novel of sex, drugs, and Shakespeare, now available in paperback and as an e-audiobook on iTunes and Audible.com. I'm recording this with my pants around my ankles, and you're listening to the Reduced Shakespeare Company podcast.
You know, one change I realized I forgot to talk about the other day was one change that I like is that the Black character, my character, the narrator in Romeo and Juliet, now plays the prince, now plays Friar Lawrence, but I've always played the balcony. But that's just nice, so I don't have to sit there the whole time as the narrator watching Romeo and Juliet happen.
Well, and because Romeo and Juliet was originally designed as a two-person show for Daniel and Adam, then the narrator was added in. I actually did it as a two-person show up at the Oregon Country Fair with Adam in the summer of 1990. So you did all the Romeo stuff as well as all the narrator stuff, which can be done.
Yeah.
It just makes the changes really fast, which is silly.
Yeah, which is increasingly silly. So how has Singapore changed in the last 15 years since we've been here? Dramatically.
Yeah. The amount of building, the construction is really unbelievable.
Yeah. It's still ongoing. I mean, when I was driving in from the airport, the guy told me that, you know, there's so much building going on here that the state bird of Singapore is the crane.
Right, yeah. The building crane.
Yeah.
Yeah. It makes sense because of the boom years of the 90s.
Yeah.
we were here in 92 and then 96, so I think the boom had started in 96. Right. But in, 13 years, it has really grown. And, of course, they have the Singapore Flyer, which is their answer to the London Eye.
Yeah.
And they're building what they call euphemistically two integrated resorts, which are gambling casinos. But the Sands people from the United States are in on that. And apparently that was a big debate among the community. But somebody was telling us that Macau modernized their casinos a few years ago and made so much money. I think the Singaporean government said, well, this is a better destination than Macau.
Right.
And so they're building one on Sentosa Island, which is their big recreational island, and that kind of makes sense. But the other one is right down there on the water.
Right in the view of the Singapore Flyer, which is unfortunate.
Yeah. So...
Wait, did that just criticize the government? Are we going to get thrown out of the country?
No, it's a great country. We love it. We would love to come back. What Jane was saying, we were sort of saying, well, it seems like more and more old Singapore is disappearing, although they have bits of it in Arab Street and the Indian Quarter. But Jane said, well, it's always been a country that took in other cultures, and it's always been a merchant culture, a mix, and very business oriented. So if you think it kind of makes sense. There's, for my money, okay, that's plenty of skyscrapers, but I guess you can't have that attitude if you're a businessman.
Well, do you think in two or 300 years people are going to come here and go, oh, look at those quaint 20th century skyscrapers. Aren't they cozy and lovely looking? I love how they built the Singapore Flyer to be, 15 meters higher than the London Eye?
13 meters higher. I think in Chinese, 13 is a lucky number. Up on the top of the flyer, they point out this one building where the number 13 is kind of built in a huge way into the side of the building, but it's subtle. But they point it out, and you go, oh, yeah, that's a lucky number. All kind of feng shui things. The Singapore Flyer used to turn in one direction, and they had a feng shui master come and say, oh, no, the way it's turning, it will suck all the wealth out of Singapore. So apparently they spent a bundle to re-engineer it to rotate the other way so that the wealth comes into Singapore.
That rocks. But have they figured out yet that it doesn't fly? It's a fixed wheel. What's up with that?
When you get on it, they say have a happy flight and all that. So it's funny.
Well, and from the top of it, can't you see Malaysia and Indonesia and...
And Chicago. I mean, it is really
high. That's a high flyer.
I had another thing. Oh, I got to visit in walking around Jubilee Hall in Raffles Hotel, where we performed last time we were here, which looks largely the same, although I guess they don't have the old Singapore experience, bad animatronic history of Singapore with the two British, colonialists talking about my time in the Punjab. I guess that's changed.
Let me make you a sling, a Singapore sling. No, I'll have my wog do it. There we go.
Tasteful, always tasteful. Yeah. And I walked over past the Victoria Theater, the Victoria Hall, which is where we performed Jess Adam and I in 1992, and that's been refurbished, I think, once at least since we were there, and I believe it's about to undergo another big refurbishment.
Well, and walking around Raffles was great, too, because Raffles is one of the places that still retains some of this colonial feel that I think the state has lost a little bit, certainly in this part of town, since we were here 15 years ago. I did walk a little bit through Fort Canning Park, which is lovely down near the water, and those bits of old Singapore are still very appealing. They're just few and the Arab Quarter and the Indian Quarter, but those places just seem, they're not as, prevalent in the downtown area.
Yeah, apparently... some corrections. One is allowed to chew gum in Singapore. I don't know if one is allowed to import it, but one of our hosts told us, well, you can chew it, you're just not allowed to spit it out, or you're not allowed to use it on the subway. But you had an interesting story from the subway.
Well, I just read an article, because I thought for sure they were just, puling my leg, because, I'm a Yank. You can tell me anything and I'll believe it. So I asked around, but I read this article, and it said, that just last week two people were fined $30 for sucking a lozenge on the subway. So nothing, no gum, no sweets.
Is sucking a lozenge a sort of Singapore euphemism like hiking the Appalachian Trail?
You beat me to the joke.
That's why I hold the microphone.
Boy, I am gullible. Yeah.
That's it for this week's Reduced Shakespeare Company podcast. Send us your changes via email to feedback@reducedshakespeare.com. You can interact with other fans at our website, reducedshakespeare.com. Just click on forum. You can also find us at facebook.com, myspace.com/reducedshakespeare. Become a subscriber to our YouTube channel, or better yet, become a twit. Follow us on Twitter at twitter.com/reduced. Thanks as always to webmaster Matt Rippey. Changed from Adam Long into Matthew Croak. Music by John Weber and Garage Band. Our random fan shout out this week goes to Catherine Edwards. No reason, it's just random. Special thanks to Jess Winfield. And finally, thanks very much to you for listening. I'm Austin Titchener, 139 417ths of the Reduced Shakespeare Company. This podcast is a production of the Reduced Shakespeare Company, reducing expectations since 1981. Go to reducedshakespeare.com for performance dates, actor bios, email newsletters, and so much less.